Hey everyone, I want to thank you for tuning in to the Jason Sloan Radio Show, podcast number 37, powered up by Bad Fish Outdoors Media, going old school there, and we've got Mr. John Hoyer on the line tonight. We're going to talk about some multiple things and all over the board, as I'm sure it usually goes. How are you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. So where are you at now? I know you're on the road all over the place, but where are you at currently?
I am in the Minneapolis metro. I'm actually stopping at my aunt and uncle's house for dinner. My parents are in town from Florida, so a rare get-together with these guys.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, that's. I think you guys in the summer, from what I hear, you don't get a lot of evenings like that, do you?
No, one or two a summer, I feel.
Yeah, so where are you based out of?
I live in basically by Lake Minnetonka, so Orono.
Okay.
It's on the west side of the lake.
Oh, very nice. I figured you for living out in the boonies somewhere, but yes, you're right in there. That's pretty cool. And yeah, so I was just reading about how you were doing a shoot with the Next Bite guys and Corey over there. How'd that turn out?
That turned out, it couldn't have turned out any better, actually. I guess it could be a long story, but the short version was I was on Vermilion guiding for a few days after our Devil's Lake Walleye tournament and had like, oh, I don't even know, 2 bites in 3 days. And I called those guys, and they were skeptical. They're like, are you sure we can't grind out, you know, 3 fish for a show? And I'm like, I wouldn't be calling you if I was confident. So we called the audible, and we went to Leech Lake, which apparently is the land of zero muskie anglers, and it was so refreshing. I mean, it was muskies doing muskie things. They weren't even feeding at feeding windows. They were biting when you cast their lure to them. Like, it was, it turned out to be a slam. Like, that'll be, I guess what they're saying is probably their best muskie show of all time.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, it's funny how, and I've seen that over here too in northern Wisconsin, how the rotation of where the pressure goes, you know, how it was, you know, I think it was the first real explosion of the musky attention over there was Leech, I think. And then it went to Mille Lacs and then to Vermilion. It bounced around, and you don't hear Leech talked about much.
No, and that's why, I even second-guessed myself saying that word right now. But, I mean, in reality, it's a lot bigger than Vermilion. It can handle more pressure. And,
right.
I mean, really, the pressure you see on that is for the Frank Schneider tournament each year. And, you know, it's usually one on Leech Lake, and there's a lot of, like, 2-3 fish, you know, catches for people in 3 days. So, but you're completely right. I mean, that's where I've gone, you know, to Vermilion. And, but what you end up learning on Vermilion over time is, like, you have a better chance of catching one, you know, a lot of times on like a random shoreline where it's unpressured, where you're
right.
Literally, you're just fishing for an unpressured fish, and then you have a higher chance of, you know, actually getting bit.
Yeah, and one of the things I've heard kind of overall for this summer was that the musky bite overall, be it northern Wisconsin or over there where you are, it's been a tough summer. And some guys were talking about maybe that was because of the late spring that some stuff got screwed up there and was pushed forward. You know, there's some guys here that are doing okay on action on smaller fish, but is that kind of the word on the street over there? Is that it's been a little tougher summer?
Yeah, it's not even a word on the street. I mean, it's an all-out consensus. I mean, you know, the open water bite, that, you know, a lot, I don't do it, but a lot of my guide buddies have that so dialed in, and it's like, you know, it's like down to a catch rate per hour even, you know, around the first major moon phase in July. They didn't experience that. I mean, they caught 10% as many fish. And then, like,
wow.
As far as, like, the initial summer peak thing on the rocks, like, you know, I was there on Vermilion, and I had a day we had 6 bites, and they're all just kind of nips. You know, like, we went 1 for 6. And then, you know, for me, I left for the Devil's Lake tournament, but I was predicted, like, okay, this 1 week coming up here will be, you know, 6 bites a day type thing. And it never really happened. There was a couple little weather days, like, mixed into that first week of what I call summer peak. And people caught, you know, two muskies, but nobody had the six fish day or the five fish day. So, yeah, from there on, I mean, between all my guide buddies and myself, it's been a grind. It's tough.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting over here, too. And what little bit of musky fishing I've been able to fit in this summer has been the same way. It's low catch rates and nothing big by any means. So if you had a prediction, I know that the PMTT on Vermilion is a little ways out, but if you had a prediction for that, what would you say?
If the tournament was today and it's not, I would say, honestly, it could be three fish to win that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, inevitably, there will be a 50-incher involved there one way or another.
Right.
Or, you know, maybe two big ones and another fish. But, you know, September is a tough time of year up there, and a lot of that is because of the pressure. You know, I look at it one of two ways. Like I said before, it's either finding these different areas, which are, you know, low number areas, but higher percentage of catching. Or, you know, there has been patterns that develop in that time of year in September where it's just like one magic lure where, you know, you can go anywhere with it and you're going to get follows from big fish, you're going to get bites. So it'll play out one of those two ways. But, you know, by that third day to catch a fish, it's going to be, you know, three times as hard as the first day. So that's where, honestly, I put that tournament at three, maybe four fish to win it.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's funny you talk about that hot bait. I was over there, I don't know how many years ago this is, like 6 years ago, and now I'm seeing here too, but we had, and the, you know, I'm not trying to sell anything, but you guys were hammering fish on those rabid squirrels that Tanner used to make, and they were buying out, and he was done making them at the time. And they were going around trying to buy up all these rabid squirrels to just something different, a smaller lure, where everybody's obviously throwing hoppy stuff, you know, the musky mayhem stuff, and something different came, and they just crushed fish on those. And now I've been hosting this PMTT thing over here with the one-day tournaments, and the guys that are, I think, in second for team of the year are throwing rabid squirrels. It's weird.
Yep. Yeah, and... You know, I started the same way, like any tournament success I had, I could outwork the competition in my mind because I was young and, you know, I could blast a cowgirl all day. And,
right.
You know, now older, wiser, but, you know, I do lean on a lot of just a bunch of little customs that I make, you know, but
right.
Single-bladed stuff, you know, something that just has less of a presence in the water. And, yeah, I mean, you're spot on. Those guys that use rabid squirrels, I can think of the last Hartman tournament where there's a lot of fish caught on those, you know, on Vermilion. So it's pretty interesting how smart muskies can get over time.
Yes, there's, I mean, that conditioning thing, and we have some theories on that with our thoughts on the spawning over here where they're, fight netting the fish and some stuff where these fish get conditioned not to come in and get fight netted to get spawned out, because of the traumatic experience that it is for those fish, and maybe that's pushing those fish off of the best spawning areas, that these fish aren't coming back in. I mean, it's one of those theories from us that they call us our stool biologists. I mean, what the hell do we know? But if you think about how a fish or a big buck or something gets conditioned, that maybe that might be some effect. But do a lot of guys over there, do they throw or like the rubber still, or is that not necessary over there?
You know, I guess if you look at a lot of the guys that come up for the weekends and stuff, you know, it's less of that. But like for myself, from the back of the boat when I'm guiding and all my guide buddies, yeah, we're constantly throwing, you know, rubber, glide baits, beavers, you know, anything that's just not a bucktail from the back. So.
Right.
I still throw a ton of rubber. I mean, it's probably, 60% of what I throw in the summer.
Nice. Well, wasn't that one of those funny things that, it was one of those things when that first came out, I mean, what a no-brainer that nobody thought of. It's a big Mr. Twister tail, and we used to catch bass when we were kids, that was our go-to bait, was a Mr. Twister. We didn't have a lot of artificial choices at that time other than a Rapala or something, but it's basically a big Mr. Twister tail, you know, and why wouldn't it work?
Right. Yeah. And I remember my first bite on a bulldog, a Magnum bulldog, and I think I lost it. And my second bite, I broke my rod on it. I had the thing bite on slack line. I just unloaded on it. But, talk about the ultimate jig bite. If you had this interview with Chase Parsons right now after Leech Lake, he caught, what did he catch, 4 of his fish on a Medusa.
Okay.
And I was explaining to him, you know, he's like, I don't know anything. I've never thrown one of these. What do I do? And I'm like, you know, rip it, series of rips, hard, soft, mix it up a little bit, and just come back on semi-slack line. When you feel that tick, like the biggest walleye bite ever, I go, drop your hook, drop your rod tip, and unload on the thing. And so he got to, I think he dumped like 2 on them too, but if you would ask him that question right now, he would still be giggling. Like, he was loving life, feeling those muskies just crush, you know, a Medusa.
Yeah, there's something about that hit, you know, on that rubber, and, you know, our crew's been doing that in tournaments for a lot of years, and even Wojewski, after opening weekend of the muskie fishing, always had to go to the chiropractor, and the chiropractor was going to call it bulldog neck from the first. All of a sudden, you throw pounders for 16 hours out of the blue, and, he was a little beat up from that. But they work.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, for sure. And then, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's kind of funny to, like on Leech, for instance, like realize how much pain I fought through in my muskie fishing career, all with that, you know, just that anticipation of getting bit. And I mean, when then you catch one every, you know, 3-4 hours or whatever, and like all that pain goes away and you're good. To go for another hour, and it's kind of funny, you know, to think about, like what you were saying, bulldog neck, how we've all battled through it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. So now you're kind of moving around a lot. I mean, obviously with the NWP and stuff. Now, how do you deal with that traveling schedule? You know, I mean, I'm in a hotel covering these tournaments for 3 days, and that drives me crazy, but, I mean, how's that all the work out for you?
It's like one of the least thought about things. You know, we for the NWT, it's pretty simple. We always do like a VRBO rental. So
Right. We'll
have that, you know, 7 days before each tournament. And then when we all show up, you know, we have a nice house where we can, you know, we already scouted them out. So that part's easy. As far as like Vermilion, you know, in Minnesota, I got a couple buddies that have places up there that they let me stay there. So that one is, you know, I don't even have to make a phone call until I'm on my way. And then, like Leech Lake, for instance, my partner Dustin Mankey, he has a place up there. So it's like the network of fishing information grows, and then so does the network of, like, lodging. So it's kind of nice, you know, I got friends at Devil's Lake, I got friends in South Dakota, and it's all – kind of a cool way to go visit a friend and stay at their place.
Yeah, so what are your thoughts on a championship NWT being on Devils?
Yeah.
Yeah, so are you excited about that?
I am for sure. You know, July, our last tournament was probably the least amount of days I'd had on the water, like for a month. But as far as like September, I probably have, 40 or 50 days on Devils in September. So that's such a great tournament lake that, like, you can ask anybody, they're excited about going there. I mean, there was probably, 10 or 15 10 patterns going on in the top 30 guys, you know, completely different patterns from our last tournament. So, you know, September is the same way.
Nice.
That's why, yeah, I think if you ask anybody that question, they'd all be excited. Devils is a fun lake to fish.
That's one of those ones we had hoped they would do it in October so we could hang out a couple of days and shoot ducks out there. It would be fun after the tournament was done. But did you eat at that Mexican restaurant in Devils while you were there?
No, and that was my vote for we always have the highest winner buys dinner, and I said that, and the guys were thinking, you know, they were planning on having more beers than I was that night, and I like to celebrate by like eating as much as I can, and then, you know, if I can fit 3-4 beers in after that, it's an afterthought. But no, I never ate there. Is it good?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Yeah, that's one of those things, because where I live, we don't have any good Mexican joints, and Keith and I were very excited to go try it because we had nothing but good reports for that, and so we ended up getting to make it over there on Friday night, and yeah, top notch. But anyway, your thoughts on Lake of the Woods for the next tour stop?
I'm excited about it. It's kind of cliche, you know, just because I'm always excited about the next National Walleye Tour event. But, you know, I actually don't have any days on the water up there, you know, other than the Rainy River and then some springtime stuff and then a little bit up in, like, Canada. So I've never done the whole, you know, open water trolling or, you know, I've ice fished those reefs and stuff that a lot of the tournaments are fished on that time of year. So, but for me, I mean, as far as like a Great Lake feel and open water trolling, like that's a complete comfort zone for myself, you know, all based on just Lowrance electronics, basically. So the only annoying part is, you know, when we go to Wisconsin or Ohio or Michigan and you can have 2 to 3 lines out, you know, now you're experimenting to practice, you know, literally at like 1/3 efficiency with just one lure per per angler. So, you know, that part, I'm already having in my head, like how often I'm going to, you know, say be switching a crankbait or presentations. And for me, I'm really kind of concentrating on, you know, what's my expected catch rate. And then, you know, I even think even further as far as pre-fish where it's like, you know, when can I start canceling things out? How fast can I do that? But I really have to cut that, you know, basically in half at least, compared to the old, you know, Wisconsin combine where you got, you know, 6 different crankbaits in the water and it, you know, stuff can, you can put stuff together fast there, but it'll be key to get on something early and then go find the right area, you know?
Right. And I've actually never fished the Lake of the Woods U.S. side. I've fished on the Canada side quite a few times. Is there a difference? I mean, I don't know. I mean, what's the difference between the U.S. side and the Canada side, if any?
You know, I think a lot of the pelagics, you know, the food that the biggest walleyes are looking for are just out in that American basin. You know, there's Canadian parts to that basin, but, you know, it's basically where Big Traverse meets the islands would be the extent of that. So, you know, from what I understand in the little bit of walleye fishing I've done in on the Canadian side in a boat, you know, the biggest fish, the overs, you know, the schools of overs, you know, those live out in the basin in this time of year. So I would say that would be the major difference where a lot of those younger fish, you know, are hanging out on reefs or on, you know, transition lines where, you know, the big fish are just, you know, straight up roamers like summertime walleyes are.
Gotcha. And then, kind of an off the cuff question, but, I always look at this for myself with walleye fishing. One thing I'm not very good at is fishing crawler harnesses. That's something I need to work on, that angle of the walleye fishing. What angle of walleye fishing would you say that you would like to improve on?
Lead core trolling.
Okay.
It's it's like my least favorite thing to do. I only do it in tournaments. I don't do it for fun. You know, I'd rather go catch less casting than to pull lead. And I mean, look at the last tournament. You know, there's guys that only pull lead core. You know, and for me, you know, I lean towards snap weights more. I just feel like I'm in more control. But I know that lead core, you know, it has its time and its place, obviously, on structure even more. But, yeah, that's my least favorite thing to do, and that's definitely my that's my worst. I'm not good at it.
So in the fall, did you get a chance to do any hunting? Is that something you do, or not so much.
Oh, for sure. You know, I guess if you look at the last, like, 15 years of my life where I've really spent a lot of time musky fishing in the fall, you know, I used to pheasant hunt every weekend. Before that, I would duck hunt every weekend and take trips, but now it's definitely an absolute treat for me, you know, to get out with some dogs and either do some pheasant or duck hunting. My deer hunting is really half-assed. I mean, I go for rifle opener with my buddies, and, you know, I sit and I get ADD in the stand, and if I had one day where I saw like 15 deer in the stand, I would be hooked for life, but I've never had that day. But I can watch, I mean, I can literally watch, I'll watch bow hunting shows, deer hunting shows all winter long and just feed off the excitement of it, you know, but I've never had that day that got me hooked, luckily.
Oh, there you go, because that would really cut into your fishing. And up here, you know, that same thing, it's like, you know, you have like a month of good hunting, so even the hardcore musky guys, boy, it's tough to get away from that hunting when you only have a short amount of time, you know, to do that kind of thing. And one more thing before I let you go here. Favorite type of fishing? You got to pick any time. It's spring walleyes. It's summer muskies. It's big pike through the ice, big perch through the ice. You got a weekend to go do one thing. What are you doing?
Ooh, I honestly would probably say perch fishing through the ice.
There you go.
Yeah. Of everything I do, it's something about like the camaraderie of like, you know, 4, 6, 8 guys just drilling holes. And I've used this word a lot. I just think it's such a good descriptive word, but like the anticipation is like rampant when you're perch fishing in the winter. And, you know, days that we don't catch them, we drill 1,000 holes. Days that we catch them, we only drill 200. But no matter what, like, I've never seen more grown men giggle than, you know, than when you land on a school of jumbos in the Dakotas. And I get perch fever so bad. Like, I can't even think to get my line back down there is, like, the only thing I care about, you know, and it's like, It literally excites me as much as anything. It's pretty funny, but I love perch fishing.
Isn't that great? That ice fishing, you know, that's something that's come a long way as far as being one of my favorite things to do. When I was in high school, you did it because you're trying to get out of the house and get away from your parents and all that, and you had shitty gear and all this stuff, terrible clothing. Now with the technologies, with the portable shacks, the heaters, even our permanent shacks here, we can get out and be comfortable. And that ice fishing is more, there's nobody up. I mean, yeah, if you get in a popular ice fishing spot, there's people around, but it's nothing like summer. And that whole deer camp feel like you're talking about, where you get a group of people. We got the gas grill going. We got deep fryers going and frying bluegills as they come out of the hole. That ice fishing is probably right up there with my, it's, you know, it's an arguable point. What's my favorite thing to do as far as that goes, for sure. I 100% agree with you. And on those perch, we don't get those big perch here. Occasionally we get into some nice ones, but I always said when I had to break down what the best eating fish was, it's splitting the hairs if they're fresh, but that perch, I would argue, is number one. And I'll ask you this. Northern pike, most underrated eating fish out there. What do you think?
I agree. I love northern pike. It's funny, though, that I'm sitting here waiting to go eat dinner with my dad. My dad told me a long time ago we caught like a 6 and an 8 pounder, and I said, I'm like, Dad, we got to figure out how to clean these pike. And he looked at me and he said, John, why don't we figure out how to catch walleyes better instead of cleaning pike? So, like, from that day on, we've always counted pike as, like, -1, no matter what we're fishing for.
Yep.
And, but when I go to North Dakota, my friends, you know, will keep some 4 to 6 pounders or whatever. And
yep,
you're right. I mean, walleye's bland. You know, perch is even, it's got a little sweetness to it. But when you have a nice pike fillet, that's, like, some nice flavor. I mean, it reminds me of saltwater fish, where you actually are dealing with nice bull. bold flavors. So, no, I agree completely.
Yeah, and if a guy takes
the
time,
I'll trade you pike for walleye.
You know, that's what I always said. If someone offers you a bag of fish, it's already clean. It's already, you know, the Y bones are out of it. I'm taking northerns over walleye any day. Now, somebody gives me a bucket of walleyes uncleaned and a bucket of pike uncleaned, I'm taking the walleye. You know, and I'm very good at cleaning pike, but it's just it's twice the time and all that. But anyway, bud, I'm gonna let you get going. I know you got dinner there with family, and we'll talk soon. And we're gonna have Andrew Ragus up right after this, and we'll talk to you soon, bud.
Sounds good. We'll see you at Lake of the Woods.
For sure.
Take care. Thanks.
All right, everyone, we're back from break, and I forgot to mention in that last segment, if you want to get a hold of John Hoyer, he's on Facebook and also has a website over at hoyerfishing.com. And now we have the Bassman on. We're going to talk about some current patterns going on up in the Northwoods with northwoodsbassfishing.com's Andrew Ragus. How are you doing today?
Hey, buddy, I'm doing good. You still haven't learned to pronounce my last name correctly, but I'll give you an exemption.
All right, is it Ragus?
Yes.
Okay, there, I got it. Yep, yeah, just Ragus, yeah, that's better.
I know, my dad listens, he'll be wondering why the hell I'm still pronouncing my last name wrong, but
there
it's
you
all
go.
Good.
So, you're up, I know, you're up here the last couple weeks and seem to be doing pretty good on the bass.
Yeah, since mid-July, but now this week I had to return south to Chicago for like 2 or 3 days, but then I'll be back again on Friday. So, yeah, big fish going every day. No giants, but when all the guide customers are happy catching 18 to 20 inches each day, that's pretty good. So, no complaints.
Well, no, you can't complain about 18 to 20 inches.
Yeah,
not
for them and for the inland lakes, those are trophies.
Right, and I kind of want to talk about a season breakdown as far as what you've seen overall this season. Starting early, you know, obviously we had the late spring.
Yeah.
How's this season kind of stacked up against previous ones?
I would say this past May was awesome compared to the last few years. We kind of had that gradual warming trend, which we want for early spring. But it seems like, you know, a week or two after our late ice out, all the water temps everywhere were already pushing 60 degrees. And at that point, the bass just wanted to spawn, get it over with, and they went into overdrive with feeding and spawning. So that was kind of very quick and rapid compared to years past. June, on the other hand, first week of June, we were already doing post-spawn fishing. So the smallies were all pretty much done on most waters. The largemouth were long done. I was already catching post-spawn skinny fish first week of June, which typically doesn't really happen until end of June. So that was kind of interesting, I thought. And then July, everything's been kind of normal except for a couple things. Our water temperatures seem to be fluctuating all over the place. Some weeks they'll be very warm, pushing 80 degrees, whereas, you know, we've had very huge cool fronts and cold downs. Cool downs happening lately, and now water temps are back to the upper 60s and low 70s. So typical summer patterns, you know, they come 1 week and then they're gone the next. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and you know, I've observed that since mid-July. And then our typical big fish patterns, I like to do a lot of night fishing. I like to throw top waters early in the day, late in the day, crankbaiting, and stuff like that just hasn't been happening since mid-July, but there's a warming trend coming now for mid-August, probably up until Labor Day weekend, so I think this month especially we'll get some good summer patterns dialed in and going. And then another observation, weed growth is down this year. A lot of lakes just have crappy weeds. They're not really bloomed fully where they should be. And then I haven't really noticed much Cisco activity on some of the deep, clear lakes where I like to do my open water smallie fishing. So that was another thing that I've seen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about those Ciscos. I haven't been out in a while. I like to chase the walleyes and the muskies around those Ciscos. I haven't actually been out looking. I do know that a lot of times this time of year, that open water bite it really tends towards late in the day, early in the day, and then after dark, it seems that the Siskels will be deep, and then they'll come up. I mean, everybody knows that. They come up in the low light times. But I have not been out to check it at all. But, you know, there have been a lot of fish on the humps from what I've seen, too, the typical.
Yep. Yeah, humps, you know, open water basins, too. And what's cool, though, sometimes if you go out there early in the day, low light, you'll see Siskels jumping happily. You know, they'll be porpoising up like whales and even clearing the water. So that's something that's pretty cool, which you don't see often. But when you do, I would think the fishing can be pretty good for your open water fish.
Yeah, I do know that that's not something that people think about with bass. But, you know, if the if the walleyes and the pike and the muskies are doing it, why wouldn't bass do it?
Yeah, smallies especially.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we started catching them road trolling years ago when we had the explosion of bass in the chain here in town, and you'd get all excited. You'd see a board go back, and you'd pull it up, and there's a, you know, 14-inch bass on there. And we caught them like that out in the middle of nowhere, and it's like, wow, they're haven't seen that before, so that was kind of neat. But, and then again, for the season now, have you been any new lures or things like that that you've tried this year that people possibly know about?
You know, I've had to think outside of the box a lot this year because my typical arsenal of crankbaits and topwaters for midsummer fish just have not been happening. And a lot of times I treat all my lures as situational tools that'll get the job done. You know, it's like musky fishing, kind of. You have your five favorite baits that you truly master, but then, you know, philosophically and technique-wise, you learn how to work them. And, you know, each bait, you know, it works for, like, a specific time period, depth, you know, location of the lake, and, you know, depending on what the fish are doing and where they're at. But, you know, my standbys just haven't been producing yet. So this year, outside of the box thinking, and obviously a lot of people do this all throughout the Great Lakes, Upper Midwest region, and other parts of the country, the Ned Rig and the Hair Jig have been scoring a lot of fish for my boat. And, you know, I'm sure people are fishing this way a lot of times, but our fish up north here in north central Wisconsin on them in waters, I truly don't believe they see these baits quite often. So the Hair Jig was rocking pretty much for all of the month of June and early July. And then since mid-July onward up until now, the Ned Rig, it's just been working great. And the Ned Rig, for you guys, I do modify it a bit. I have my own unique variation of it. I use a 5/16 ounce jig head, a mushroom-style, flat-style head. And rather than use a tiny pinch-down piece of worm like a Senko or Wacko-style worm, I'll use an actual whole 4-inch leech pattern, black-colored worm stick bait. And that Ned Rig, I kind of weed out all the little fish, and rather all the big fish are responding to it. So I treat the Ned Rig in my way as a big fish tool. And those two baits especially this summer have been really kicking a lot of butt out there.
Yeah, a little earlier in the year when I was out with some guys, and one of the dudes was using one of those Ned Rigs, and he was actually getting a lot of walleyes on it, too, along with the bass, which was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I'd never even really seen it before.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah,
yeah,
so that was neat.
And then, yeah, adding to the Ned Rig, you know, each day it hasn't been like the first lure I really want to use in the day. You know, I'm still throwing my crankbaits, topwater, spinnerbaits, swim jigs, tubes, you know, football heads. I'm still prioritizing using those. But towards midday, end of the day, you know, when the trip is concluding and we just want to catch a lot of fish, you know, make the day worthwhile for the customers, the Ned Rig has really saved us. So it's made us look good, too, and a lot of big fish have been caught on it.
Another thing, and then getting back to that Hair Jig, I know that Gordy, one of the guys I fish with a lot, he got back into those maybe, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. And then I do know that over on Sturgeon Bay that it's becoming popular again. There's some guys that are hand-tying them over there. But that is something that you really didn't hear about. Back when I got started doing the walleyes many years ago, a lot of people used hair jigs, and then it just dropped off, and you really don't see a lot of that anymore.
I know, yeah, yeah. What's funny, a lot of these lures from the 1950s and 60s that everyone was using, they lost popularity just because of more mainstream type of stuff and innovations, but nowadays it seems like we all go back to these, you know, old school lures and the old school style of thinking, and they work just as well, if not better, than they did back then. So that's pretty much the deal right there with those style, you know, the hair jig especially.
Yeah, yeah, that's like, you know, or Lindy used to make them prepackaged. We sold a ton of them, and then, like I said, I don't even think I own one right now, which is a shame. But then I was kind of looking at the extended forecast. I have actually pulled that up today just to kind of get a conversation piece here. But it sounded like September is going to be on the cool side, and obviously who the heck knows till it gets here.
Yeah, who knows? I haven't even looked that far. All I know is starting right now today up through at least August 15th, if not later than that, is going to be the warmest, steadiest weather of the summer that we'll have in the North Woods. So from what I've seen, sun every day, humidity, mid-80s, so that's all I know and all I care about, and it will probably deliver some of the best and most consistent bass fishing of the year, I believe.
Yeah, it should definitely be consistent for sure, but one of the reasons I looked at that for September was, now if a September, if it's cooler than normal, how do you go about it in September?
You know, when that's the case, that'll mean that our weed line fishing, you know, all those weeds will die quicker, so that'll make patterning at least big largemouth a little trickier, because if they're not going to have any weeds, then they'll be in other parts of the lake. So that's number one. Number two, cooler September will mean turnover happens much quicker and much sooner. So you know our philosophy with turnover fishing, and I'm sure you're the same way. You can fish ahead of it or behind it. So I always choose to fish ahead of turnover, but it'll all depend on, you know, lake type, lake size, where you're at, and how you adapt accordingly to the change in conditions. You know, mid-September, I especially love smallie fishing the flowages in the river system. Obviously, it's a little tricky because you're dealing with fish that are migrating from river to flowage for their wintering purposes, but usually when you find a couple fish, that means that they're going to be schooled up together, and they will be schooling in fish sizes that are of the same size. So, for instance, if you catch a 20-inch, your chances are that all the fish in that pod are going to be, you know, 18 to 20 inches, if not bigger. So that's pretty fun. That's something I like to do a lot in September. But then your natural lakes that'll turn over, you know, that'll be very tricky. Because as you know, some lakes develop a huge thermocline and they will stratify, whereas other lakes don't even develop a thermocline, so they'll never turn over. But, you know, mid-September, what I always tell people to do locally in our waters, you know, if you don't know how to combat turnover, fish the flowages, fish the rivers, fish any lake that doesn't turn over, because then you don't have to deal with any of that type of stuff that'll alter your fishing.
Yeah, then after turnover, about how long? I'm sure obviously it would depend on, you know, temperature and wind and that kind of thing, but about how long does it take a lake to get back on track as far as bass go after turnover is done?
You know, in my experience, I've seen them recover within a week. Once that water clarity, clears up, you know, that pea green soup and all the debris that turnover leaves behind, once that settles and the lake clears up finally, then the fish are ready to go again. And obviously those fish at that point after turnover, they're gonna be already wintering. So, you know, those deeper fish, obviously, they'll have the clearer water, the cleaner water, the water that's fresh too. And they'll be inhabiting those areas of the lake that they, you know, weren't at all previously in the year too. So they've got, I kind of feel like those fish, once they invade their wintering areas, hit the deep rocks, deep wood, deep cribs, they're in a happy state at that point.
Right, and that was, I know that you and I had talked about that in the past, that we'd like to see some kind of the regulation on those fish that time of year, because if you do find them, it's not too hard to catch a lot of them.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
I'd like to see some kind of, but, you know, it's hard to micromanage and it's hard to put these extra regs. I understand that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I know, we know how our DNR and our biologists think, You know, they want regulations to be uniform throughout the entire northern zone. So,
right.
Yeah, like you say, it would be very hard to micromanage every single fishery to adhere to at least the closed season. But as you know, we have a lot of those protected 18-1 lakes where the bag limit is one fish per day, and that fish is, must be 18 inches or larger. And, you know, those are our low-density lakes. Those are the ones that need to be protected from harvest, from exploitation, and things like that. So I have asked, and, you know, I've inquired with our biologists to at least maybe set up some type of experimentation, you know, maybe on just on those 18-1 lakes, low-density trophy lakes that are more sensitive to harvest and exploitation, to perhaps maybe test those waters maybe for a close fall season. I think that would be a benefit.
Yeah, and even I think it was the spring hearings this year, there was a question to lower, I believe it was just the largemouth size limit down to 12, which I would be in full support of that. I would think if someone is going out with the mentality to keep a few fish to eat, that to open up 13 inches for him might on the back end protect maybe more of those 16, 17 inch plus. But that was something I always thought that why this bag limit, you know, you have a one over for several lakes with size limits,
yep,
for walleyes, and why just across the board it wouldn't be. If you're on a five fish bag for bass, why there isn't a only a one over 16 or 17 or whatever to protect the big fish, because even in lakes where they want fish harvested, like the chain here, to kind of bring things back into balance, that,
oh, yeah,
but the majority of the fish you're going to be catching are 13 inches. But to protect those large fish, even on a chain like this, I think, even when we would go out, haven't done it this year actually, but to go out and to keep a bunch of largemouth to eat, and you got into some 16, 17s, you didn't even think of taking those home.
Nope.
But just to see something like that, and it's just, but that, I mean, you can go on all the day about that. They should also have some protections on our larger pike, and
yeah,
I don't
I agree.
See that ever happening, but.
No, unfortunately not. That's another debate. That's another thing we should pressure our guys to do. But no,
yeah,
back to the largemouth proposal, though. Yeah, I wouldn't say I got into some hot water, but I did have a couple fans from my website, you know, speak out against my ideas and philosophy, because obviously we know the Minocqua chain, you know, other lakes in the Minocqua Woodruff area, they're just riddled. Purely infested with 12 and 13 inches, that there's nothing you can really do about getting rid of them unless, you know, you did a mass exodus of fish and mass harvest. But, you know, I'm all for reducing the largemouth bag and size limit, but the tournament guys will get very upset then because they adhere to that five fish at 14 inches sack rule for all their events. So, you know, if there's a solution, I think, you know, where both sides can be happy, from us recreationally to the professionals and the tournament guys, then, you know, there's got to be a solution.
Yeah, and that's another one of those things, too. I had taken some flack, too, over the years for keeping largemouth. And what you're doing, and I had one guy, I think he was from Pennsylvania or New York or something, and he's like, well, geez, you shouldn't be keeping all those fish. And they're going on what their local fishery there is, and they can't keep fish like that for the good of the fishery. They don't have enough. It's the same thing where if I look at, I think it's in Georgia, you can shoot a white-tailed deer a day for like a 90-day season. I mean, you can shoot a deer a day, and for me to sit up here and say, oh, you shouldn't be doing that because
yeah,
I can't do it here, that would destroy our deer herd. But down there, they can do that. They've got enough does. They can shoot all those deer. And so a lot of times people get on, you know, like if I sit and I see someone killing 38-inch pike somewhere in Canada, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like,
yeah,
well, that's the average size. This is the average size. This is what we eat.
Yep.
You know? But, yeah, I, as far as a happy medium, I mean, and one of the things I think I am seeing the chain here in town starting to, I'm starting to balance out a little bit.
Yeah,
now.
We're seeing better fish now. All the walleyes are coming back, so we want them to take over, obviously. And they're going to keep the largemouth numbers in check. And then hopefully our harvest has, you know, led to the greater size structure in bass. So I have seen that too, and we've talked about it.
Yeah, I haven't, to be honest, I don't know of a lot of people. I mean, that doesn't mean it's not happening, but I don't think there was a ton of people harvesting the bass, but, you know, enough maybe to start getting it in check. And, yeah, I think that the walleyes coming back are naturally doing it, too. I've seen a lot better size from one end of the chain to the other on both species of the bass.
Definitely.
So. All right. Well, I better get to step in here. We're going to wrap this one up. You got your local bass report, and thanks to Andrew Rogas for stopping by and giving us the lowdown on the current bass situation. We're going to wrap up Podcast 37, and we'll see you next week. Go!